When I recall the first time I met Violet, it embarrasses me. I hold the memories up to the light and think, did it really happen like this? And even if it did, why not tell it differently, more generously? Why don't I pretend even to myself? There's nobody left to know, nobody who could catch me out. I could say that she came in and took my hands in hers and looked into my eyes and said, she always wanted a friend, a true friend, that she could see we were alike, with twin, ravaging hearts under our ribs. My door blouse could not conceal that from her. I could say that she picked me out of everyone in the town, was drawn along the sun-bleached stone of the pavements by hunger, by instinct, to where I had always stood, waiting. I could say a lot of things, but perhaps it's best to be honest now. I didn't sense her walking towards me on that chill morning in early spring. Didn't notice her opening the door to the bakery. Her hair was dark and loose, spilling over her stiff white blouse and the lace at its collar. She hung behind the other customers, looking at the loaves stacked behind me one by one, as if making an important decision. The other women in the shop greeted her. Welcome, they said. We've been expecting you. She smiled at that, and I had to stop myself from brushing my hand against hers when I passed her the loaf she finally chose, but I couldn't say much to her. I was afraid of her. She thanked me and left, and through the window I saw her pause and open the paper bag for a second, as if she was considering tearing into the bread like a dog. But she didn't. She closed the bag and then was gone. I stared after her until the next customer, I don't remember who, interrupted me, impatient for their breakfast. You've seen a ghost, they joked, snapping their fingers. When I returned home later, I found my husband asleep on our bed. He slept like a baby, insensibly with his arms thrown out. I passed my hands over his body, not quite touching, along those splayed arms and along his legs, and finally, gently, lowered my palms to his chest. He was fully dressed. I climbed onto the bed, folded myself on top of him. His breathing changed, but he refused to admit he was awake. Please, I asked him. I pressed my face into his neck. He was sweating. I wanted to put my hand over his mouth so he would stop pretending, but I knew he would rather suffocate than be caught. He kept his eyes closed. I batted at his arms, his cheeks, very lightly, then less lightly, then not very lightly at all. I could admit that in those days I was sometimes jealous of the dough my husband put his hands into, worked so tenderly and tirelessly with up to the elbows. I can admit now that his bread really was the best. There was such beauty in breaking it open hot from the oven and the steam pouring out, in feeling your appetite worrying at you and knowing it would soon be sated. The astonishing fact that, living as we did in this new time of peace and plenty, we might never have to feel truly hungry again. He was on a constant mission to perfect it. You might have said it was his life's work. You might have said this not entirely seriously, but he was very serious about it. I was jealous, too, of the purity of his focus, the incremental moves towards one faultless loaf. But then what? When there was nothing left of the bread to improve, what then? Eat of it and be filled. Eat of it and be transformed. Eat of it and nothing changes. The almost imperceptible recalibration of our desire, our satisfaction. Try again. In the days that followed our first meeting, Violet haunted my thoughts. Would anyone believe me if I said I felt an intimacy with her even then? Would they believe that somewhere inside myself, I knew what she would become to me? It was in the loaves I saved for her, whirled with flour. In the outfits I started to select the evening before, hanging on my cupboard door like bodies in the dark. In the slivers of information I prized out from her, prized out from the others.